So my name is Michiel Bijlsma from the University of Utrecht, and you probably will confuse me with another Bijlsma who has been working with Henk Stove previously before me, but who now is working. We have exactly the same names and also the same initials, so it's kind of strange. What? No. He's about this big and has dark hair, so there's quite a difference. So, is this okay? So the title of my talk is Collisionless Dynamics in Tredd-Bose Gases. And I'll start with a short introduction into the length scales involved in the problem. Then I'll talk about what the people usually do to calculate the excitation frequencies of the collisionless mode. Then I'll talk about what we think one could do to calculate the modes of the coupled condensate and non-condensate. The resulting equations, I will try to look at the one-dimensional limit of the resulting equations describing these modes, and I'll end with a short conclusion. So, when talking about collective excitations in Tredd-Bose gases, there are three important length scales. First of all, there's the wavelength of the collective excitations. Second of all, there's the correlation length, which measures the healing length for disturbances from local equilibrium. And third of all, there's the mean free path of the particle-like excitations. Well, the wavelength is of the order of the width of the harmonic oscillator ground state, 2 pi h bar over m omega naught, where omega naught is the trapping frequency and the square root of this thing, of course. The correlation length, which is defined by the large distance behavior of the correlation function, is given below to C in the mean field approximation by 1 over the square root of the condensate density times the scattering length. And last but not least, the mean free path, which is inversely proportional to the average time between two collisions, is given by 1 over the peak density of the thermal cloud times the collisional cross-section sigma, where the peak density is the integral of the Bose function, which gives you the 2.61 times the thermal wavelength to the power 3 halves, and the collisional cross-section is 8 pi times the scattering length squared. If we are assigned a small interval around the critical temperature, then the correlation length is much smaller than both the wavelength of the collective excitations and the mean free path, thus resulting in effectively in two different regimes: the hydrodynamic regime, where the mean free path is much smaller than the wavelength of the collective excitations, and the collisionless regime, where the wavelength is much smaller than the mean free path. So in the hydrodynamic regime, the excitations are locally in equilibrium, whereas in the collisionless regime, they are not locally in equilibrium. And furthermore, because the correlation length is so small compared to the other length scales in the problem, we can do the so-called local density approximation, as we will see later on. So the usual way, now talk about the usual way that people derive the excitation frequencies of these excitations. If we start from the second quantized Hamiltonian, with here the total energy, total kinetic energy, and the total potential energy, and the interaction energy, where we have already renormalized the interaction potential by including all the ladder diagrams, so that it is we can describe it as a point interaction up to small distances. Then the Heisenberg equations of motion for the grand canonical average of the field operator, with here the grand canonical Hamiltonian and normalized by the grand canonical partition function, looks like this. The time derivative of the expectation value of the field operator equals the kinetic energy operator plus the traveling potential times the average plus a nonlinear term, the two-body scattering matrix times the expectation value of psi dagger psi psi. Now, we can set up a perturbational framework in the, well, this is of course all very well known, and decompose the Bose field operator into a part that describes the condensate and a part that describes the non-condensate, where the wave function of the condensate is just the expectation value of the field operator, and the expectation value of the part describing the non-condensate is zero. If we then treat fluctuations in the mean field approximation, the nonlinear term gives this result, where it becomes 2 times the non-condensate density plus the condensate density times the wave function, where the condensate density is the expectation value of phi dagger phi, and the non-condensate is just the absolute value, non-condensate density is just the absolute value of the wave function squared. So if we do this, we get the nonlinear Schrodinger equation for the condensate wave function. And if we now want to find the collective excitation, we linearize this Schrodinger equation about the equilibrium solutions for the condensate density and the non-condensate density. So how to find these equilibrium solutions? We insert into the nonlinear time-dependent nonlinear Schrodinger equation an exponential time dependency. This means that the static condensate profile satisfies the time-independent nonlinear Schrodinger equation, or Gross-Pitievsky equation, which reads mu times the wave function equals the kinetic energy operator plus the traveling potential plus a mean field term, resulting from the approximation of the nonlinear term, times the condensate wave function. And the non-condensate profile, the static non-condensate profile, can be derived from the Bukolyubov-Degen equations, which describe the quasi-particle poles of the Green's function in general, the matrix Green's function, because we have the anomalous averages. So here are the ordinary, the G11 and the G12, the average of psi psi and psi dagger psi, the anomalous averages. And this Green's function satisfies the matrix Dyson equation. The inverse of the Green's function equals the inverse of the free Green's function plus the self-energy. And to really calculate something, we of course have to do some approximation for these self-energies. And, the first thing one does is the Popov approximation, in which the self-energies sigma-1-1 is given by 2 times the two-body scattering matrix times the total density, and self-energy sigma-1-2 is given by the scattering matrix times the condensate density. To find the equilibrium dispersion, we can diagonalize the Dyson equation. The resulting Dyson equation defines an effective Hamiltonian, which we can diagonalize by Bogoliubov transformation, by decomposing the field operator describing the non-condensate into the quasi-particle creation and annihilation operators with their coherence vectors U and V. And in order to diagonalize the Hamiltonian, U and V must satisfy the Bogoliubov-Degen equations. The inverse of G naught plus sigma-1-1 times the coherence vector U plus sigma-1-2 times the coherence vector V equals h-bar omega times U, and sigma-2-1 times the coherence vector U plus the inverse of G naught So sigma 2 times the coherence vector phi equals h bar omega times the coherence vector phi, where this differential operator is given by the time derivative plus the kinetic operator plus the trimming potential minus the chemical potential. So the coupled Gross-Pitiyevsky and Bogoliubov equations can be solved numerically, and this has been done, of course, by and the picture you see here below is by dotted al from Fisdrev A, and you see that near t equals zero they fit the experimental results, but above approximately half the critical temperature, there is a significant difference between the experimental results and the theoretical results. This is not so surprising because the nonlinear Schrodinger equation describes only the time evolution of the condensate in the presence of some mean field potential caused by the non-condensate, but not the time evolution of the condensate. So what we need to do is we need to write down equations which describe the time evolution of the non-condensate. And so now we arrive at the third part of my talk, and we are thinking, okay, so the condensate is of course still described by the nonlinear Schrodinger equation, which we rewrite by decomposing the condensate wave function into the condensate density and its phase, chi. Then in the Thomas Fermi limit, neglecting the kinetic energy term. The equations of motion for the condensate density and the superfluid velocity, which is defined by h bar over m times the total derivative of the phase, look like a continuity equation. The time derivative of the condensate density equals minus the total derivative of the condensate density times the superfluid velocity, and in Newton's law, m times the time derivative of the velocity equals minus the total derivative of the trapping potential minus mu, which comes in because you need to find the right zeroth order profile, plus a mean field term. However, to describe the dynamics of the condensate, we use the Collisioners-Boltzmann equation for the quasi-particles, which describes the time evolution of the distribution function for the quasi-particles, and includes two streaming terms. First, a velocity times the spatial derivative of the distribution function, and second, a force times the momentum derivative of the distribution function, where the velocity equals the momentum derivative of the quasi-particle dispersion in the laboratory frame, which causes this factor h bar k dot vs to appear, and the force is given by the derivative of this quasi-particle dispersion in the laboratory frame with respect to x. Of course, here we have done a local density approximation because we have made a derivative expansion, and so that's where the fact that the correlation length is much smaller than the other length in the problem comes in. Now we have to write down, we want to write down some approximation for the omega in the superfluid velocity equals zero frame, and at high temperature, this is given by the free, Popov approximation, by the free dispersion plus the two-body scattering matrix times the condensate density. And to find the collective modes, we linearize the Collisioners-Boltzmann equation coupled to the nonlinear Schrodinger equation in their hydrodynamic form by writing the non-condensate profile as an equilibrium condensate profile plus fluctuations the non-condensate profile as an equilibrium profile plus fluctuations, and also the distribution function as an equilibrium distribution function plus fluctuations. If we do this, then the equilibrium profile satisfies these equilibrium collisionless equation and the time-independent nonlinear Schrödinger equation in the Thomas Fermi approximation, where of course in the collisionless Boltzmann equation you have no superfluid velocity because we are in equilibrium and this should then be zero. If we now assume the system initially to be in thermal equilibrium, then the equilibrium distribution function is just given by the normal Bose distribution function with an argument given by the free energy, free particle energy plus a mean field term minus the chemical potential plus the trapping potential, and the non-condensate density in the equilibrium non-condensate density is given by the time-independent nonlinear Schrödinger equation. Well, the resulting equations for the fluctuations now have the following nice properties. First of all, above the critical temperature, they reduce to the collisionless Boltzmann equation for an interacting inhomogeneous Bose gas in the Hartree-Fock approximation, and it is well known that for the collective modes, this approximately in good approximation gives the random phase approximation. Then at t equals zero, they give the nonlinear Schrödinger equation results, and below the critical temperature but above t equals zero, they dynamically couple the condensate and non-condensate equations. Moreover, even more importantly, they can be seen to contain the cone mode at all temperatures. The cone mode is just the mode where the center of mass of the density profiles is oscillating with the trapping frequency, and so we take the time-dependent solution, and where we have and insert an oscillating equilibrium profile, where we have to realize that the distribution function for the quasi-particles is defined in the frame where the superfluid velocity is zero, so it doesn't transform under a Galilean transformation. So the shaking distribution function for the quasi-particles is given by the equilibrium distribution function as a function of k and x minus some vector and times the time-dependent function eta, and time-dependent condensate profile is given by the equilibrium condensate profile as a function of x minus the vector n times eta, and the superfluid velocity equals the vector times the time derivative of eta. If we insert this into the linearized equations, we find that eta satisfies the harmonic oscillator equation, the double time derivative of eta plus omega naught squared times eta equals zero. And last but not least, the equations are readily generalized to include, for example, the many-body T-matrix results or the renormalization group results, of course also in the local density approximation, because they will lead to a different dispersion which we can just insert into the collisionless Boltzmann equation. So we have seen that at least we think that you can describe the coupled dynamics of the condensate and the non-condensate by a nonlinear Schrödinger equation coupled to the collisionless Boltzmann equation. And we now want to consider the simple case where we can take the one-dimensional limit, which we can do if you have a very anisotropic trap and h bar times the trapping frequency in the z direction and the interaction energy and kT are much smaller h bar times the traveling frequency in the perpendicular direction. This means that the particles in the perpendicular direction are in the harmonic oscillator ground state. So if we decompose the field operator in this way, where phi naught and phi naught are harmonic oscillator ground states, and this is just an operator depending on the z direction, we then find an effect that the three-dimensional equations just turn in their one-dimensional counterparts, with the only difference that we have to replace the scattering length with an effective scattering length given by the scattering length over 2 pi times the harmonic oscillator length L perpendicular squared. Excuse me? This doesn't have units. This. Oh. Yes.
Dimension here.
Yeah, okay, well, you're I have to think.
A effect is not really a link anymore.
No, exactly, because you're in one dimension.
You're one, the wave function has units of one over the square length instead of one over the square of the volume.
Yeah.
That's different from the anomaly effect.
Thank you. Okay, so now we consider the most simple case you can imagine. We consider a non-interacting case above DC. We can solve the Boltzmann equation exactly, which is not surprising, because an excitation is just taking out a particle out of one energy eigenstate and putting it in another eigenstate. So the eigenvalues of the Boltzmann equation will be differences between these eigenvalues, and you can actually just see that from the Boltzmann equation, which can be rewritten as minus omega over omega z plus b dagger b minus c dagger c, where the differential operators b and c just satisfy the creation and annihilation commutation relation. So again, the eigenvalues are just the differences between these things, and you can also write down the eigenstates if you want to. Now we come almost to the conclusion of my talk. I'll show you some, in the interacting case we've done some numerical simulations. We have tried to find the eigenfunctions and eigenenergies and eigenvalues numerically. However, we encountered some problems, as I will show you. This is the exact cone mode as found from the solutions I wrote down earlier, where this strange unit for R is caused by the fact that you want the distribution function f to be equally extended in the x direction as in the k direction, because that's numerically quite nice. Excuse me. Well, this is the distance in these units. What? It's the density.
Yes.
The density, excuse me. Yeah, it's the density.
What does it mean never be
the Yeah. So the density fluctuations, sorry, yes, of course. They are the density fluctuations. So the height here doesn't really mean very much, because they're infinitesimally, so you can, well. And this is the cone mode we found numerically. The eigenvalue is very close to 1. And this is the distribution function which goes with it. And finally, this is not such a nice picture, but because of the fact that you have this infinite degeneracy, the high energy states, if you discretize, then the energy differences of the high energy states will change. So what you find is, for example, you have one, the real eigenstate is sitting here, and then the next eigenstate is sitting here, but in between you have some, you have a lot of superfluous solutions caused by the discretization, which look like this. So we're now working on, well, getting rid of these. This actually concludes my talk, and these are my conclusions, that the coupled dynamics of the condensate and the non-condensate can be described with a nonlinear Schrodinger equation coupled to the collision as Boltzmann equation, that these equations describe the collective modes in all temperature regimes and can be seen to contain the cone mode. However, they're not, it's not straightforward to solve these equations numerically. I thank you for your attention.
Hi. As I understand it, the dynamics of the condensate for all three is still in Popov approximation. You don't include the anomalous average.
What I've just told is in principle the Popov, well, not really. What do you mean by the Popov approximation?
You mean the dynamics of the condensate. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Condensate,
okay, the condensate is treated in the Popov approximation.
So can you just go back to Rob Dobbs' graph, citation
from
the
jury? Yeah.
You're trying to, like, the motivation was saying that less citations get the great results when you go towards DC.
Yeah.
Robert and I have since included the effects just in the condensate of including the anomalous average, but still keeping the static cloud in the thermal cloud. And we find that you get quantitative agreement with the lower mode there, the M equals 2 mode.
Okay.
So just including the effects of the anomalous average actually gets the excitation frequency correct, like right out to virtually TC. That doesn't explain the upper excitation frequency, so
yeah.
The results may be important there.
Yeah.
But
okay.
It's worried about sort of not actually helping.
But
the average included.
Yeah. What is exactly the anomalous average?
The expectation value of the two creation.
So you get some term with the complex wave function, the complex version of the wave function in the nonlinear Schrodinger equation. Is that what you mean?
It's still real as long as you're looking at the ground state in the Grotzky-Hefsky equation, the nonlinear Schrodinger equation.
We can quite straightforwardly generalize this to do team anybody or renormalization.
I'm going to ask you about the other part of your thing. You have the condensate and then you have the non-condensate particles. And you're using a collisionless Boltzmann. I would just imagine that in this collisionless regime, diffusive behavior is what you expect of these non-condensed particles. And by ignoring the collision term in the equation, aren't you ignoring this diffusive behavior?
Well, I'm not really sure, but for example, in if you look at the dynamics of this is something completely different, but the dynamics of clusters of stars, people are also looking for eigenmodes, and it's also treated with a collisionless Boltzmann equation with some mean field interaction, which looks very much like this collisionless Boltzmann equation, and you actually have these modes. So It's not only diffusive behavior what you find.
Just keep it open to some machine. When you have the situation,
is there?
So you have no vision in white paper. It's a typical pure hydrodynamical type.
Yeah.
But hydrodynamical in the primitive way, in the Knudsen way, when you have no pre-butler, goodbye, you have no.
Okay.
I have a couple of questions. The first, concerning the mean-spin image.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so that people might recommend this on the mean-spin image that they just first. So you have some Russian equations of human brain.
Yeah. So I can't really hear you very good.
I mean, the mean field information, you do it out there with that. So what is it? So you have to throw it strictly on the part, and you have to submit it by some linear form of the field.
Yeah.
Of to which, what is the meaning of this?
Well, okay. You can. No. What I don't really understand what you mean by meaning, but if you, if you, no, yeah, which is the interaction in principle?
Correlation meaning.
But. Okay.
Does mean that the variance? Does mean the variance of the difference left, right,
well, in principle, you're expanding in the interaction, I think. So that's you have some effect. You can write down the Grand's canonical partition sum, and in principle, you get an effective potential. And then you can write down the equations of motion for the expectation values of the field operators, and this is an expansion in the interaction. Or. Interesting, but somehow that seems strange because I would expect that the interactions don't have a very long range, so that you can somehow describe the two gases as separate with some coupling between them.
Yeah, the point is that in this
but maybe
this special case with the rabbit between the compensation and the
okay.
And this makes everything what you use is a bit small, for example.
Makes it big.
Pressure from the cloud as compared to the pressure from the condensate. Everything gets comparable. Everything gets involved.
But shouldn't this somehow be an instability or of the linear equation? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, you have it back to this.
Oh.
For small applications.
Okay. Yeah.
And may I have better luck?
Sure.
So the set of mathematics you can see.
Mm-hmm.
Have you expected some shift of the frequency or I mean because it shouldn't be shifted at all.
What do you mean shifted? It's just and it's exact.
Exact.
Yeah.
So
you just insert these equilibrium profiles and then what I showed and then you can easily write down a differential equation for these for this is eta, this function of t, and this is just an harmonic oscillator equation. So it's just, it's exact.
And this, did you get it numerical or?
Yeah, okay. I show two pictures. First of all, the exact, and then the numerical result, and it is four digits or something. And if you discretize better, then the accuracy comes also better, nine digits or seven or something.
Okay. Any other questions?
You mentioned that the wavelength of the collective excitation is about the oscillator length in the trap. I think for the experiments which have been done so far, the wavelength is about the size of the condensate, and there's a big difference in materials. For instance, for axial excitations in the MIT trap, the oscillator length is 10 micrometer, but we sort of see the longest phonon mode at up to 500 micrometer. There's a factor of 50 difference.
Yeah.
And actually, especially if we discuss the transition to the hydrodynamic regime, our medium path for is in certain situations much shorter than the size of the cloud, but it is always longer than the oscillator length. So this factor of 50 might be important.
Yeah. Classification. Okay. Thank you.
Shall we thank our speakers?